Welcome to the RPGpot.podcast. I'm Reynold James, and with me is Tyler Kampstra.
Hi, everybody.
And Ashley Lai.
I'm on the highway.
Way to hell.
I'm on the highway to hell.
Oh, God, that was a treasure. The delay just completely messed us up.
I can't do a duet on the internet.
It turns out, here's the deal. On my end, I was harmonizing with Ash, and it was like, really, like, we were actually hitting it. And then all of a sudden, he started dragging it out, and I'm like, oh, there's delay. And then I got set. And honestly, if you think about it, it's a good metaphor for hell.
Hell is other people on the internet.
Thank you for making my awesome bit less awesome. I appreciate it.
That's hell. Okay.
It's human nature to take something that's so great and ruin it just a little bit so that you can have more of it. That's a quote from The Good Place.
I haven't actually watched that show.
No? Oh my God, you need to watch it.
I love your rendition of Highway to Hell. It's like, we had a great thing. There was a great thing on this podcast once. All right, folks at home, this is the second part of our two-part coverage of the nine hells. So on average, you can expect about 4.5 hells per episode.
Why nine? Why not 10 or seven? Because there were seven hells originally. Why nine?
I don't know. Ask Gary Gygax.
Okay, that's a great question. Imagine like the original list was like 17 hells. And then they were going through and like one of them was the one where like you open the fridge, but everything's expired. And
just that like, experience.
Yeah. Like he went to the fridge that day and he opened it and it's like, there's only beer. And he started pounding it, which is how he started writing the list for the 17 hells to start with. And then somebody like finally started vetoing these things.
Is nine a bad luck number? Okay. Apparently it is in Japan. Nine is a bad luck number.
That makes sense. So they're saying nine hells in Dante's Inferno. It's seven in Dante's Inferno, right?
It's seven in Dante's Inferno, but that's weird because it's lucky number seven.
Oh, Tsuka's also saying nine. Well, okay, I'm doing that quick fact check.
But how many? I think it was seven hells.
It's a Google search away. We're going to find out. Nine.
Was it?
All right.
No, everybody's right. Yeah.
I mean, it's the seven deadly sins from Paradise Lost. Is that? Jeez, I'm not well read.
Why did I think it was seven?
Seven deadly sins.
Well, we both thought it was seven, although I think if we go back in the record to the first episode, I think in that episode we asserted it was seven and then kept going. Well, we figured it out. So there probably wasn't a fridge hell then. He probably always was targeting nine and this is what we got.
Gotcha. Because people are always saying like the seventh circle of hell. So
yeah.
Oh, because it was particularly bad, right? Like that was the one with the lawyers, I think.
No. It's the circle of violence.
What is the seventh circle of hell? The violence against neighbors, violence against themselves, violence against God, nature, and art. If that doesn't sum up this podcast, I don't know what does.
Yeah, that's fair.
Violence against self, sir.
Okay. All right. So,
oh my God. I know why I'm calling it Seven Hells.
Okay.
Because it's from Final Fantasy. Seven Hells.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about Malbolgi, Malbolge. How do you pronounce that, folks? Find it out in the comments.
Is that like the Korean like shaved meat with the egg on top?
It's Malbolg.
Malbolg. Jeez. Sure, why not? So this one's weird. I mean, they're all kind of weird, but this one's especially weird. It is described as a functionally endless slope. Depending on your depiction of the hells, like there is a geography, there's a top, there's a bottom, and you can go from one layer down to another layer somehow. So I'm not sure, like, if it's an endless slope, but there's top and a bottom, is it really endless? Don't think about it too hard. This layer of hell absolutely sucks. All of the architecture maybe intentionally looks like it's just completely falling apart, but there are prisons, fortresses, citadels, lairs, etc.
I've got an answer to your physics question, and then we could do Ash's real commentary for the actual episode. Imagine if it was perfectly flat and infinite. Uh-huh. Right? That's fine. But then gravity just goes at an angle. So if you're there, feels like you're on a slope.
This is edging very closely to science talk, and I'm not here for it.
Okay, fine. You do your bit.
What if just while you were there, you always felt like you were falling over to the side slightly?
Well, no, but that's exactly what it would feel like. Like from your field of view or from your point of view, it'd feel like you're getting dragged down a slope. Much like we're dragging down Ash.
I feel like I'm in Malbolg already. It's great. So Malbolg is actually is an infinite level more of suck than the rest of hell because it is the prison part of hell. Yes, hell has a prison as well. Mm-hmm. So specifically, it is hell for prison for devils who have done something they were not supposed to. Basically, Malbolg is so described. Much. Yeah, that's great. Evil people have prisons too. So, you know.
they're lawful evil. That's the whole thing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so the way it's described is, yes, it's on an infinite slope, but also there are these adamantine towers that are on the slope that have these platforms that are balanced on it in some way. Don't know how that's supposed to work. But anyway, that is out of the path of the boulders that are coming through so that administrative stuff can be done without being hit by a bunch of boulders.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
And the punishment that a lot of bad devils get is they get lowered below these platforms into a cage where they get pummeled by stones repeatedly. So that's fun for them. So you think that the person who runs this place has to be very strict, a very special kind of evil. It's actually Asmodeus' daughter. She's the most notorious criminal in the Nine Hells. So yeah, she basically started the mafia in hell. And now is also the prison warden. That sounds like a great system.
Yeah. Now, a new one? Is that a...
No, I'm not familiar with this story. Like, the mafia in hell. So she started a crime syndicate
in hell? Yes, 100% she did.
Were they breaking the laws?
Yes. Yes, they were.
Well, at least during the episode, it's like, you know, hey, it turns out, you know, I know you've got a contract with this devil over here, but here's the deal. I think I've got a way that we can kind of get around that. Wouldn't that be nice?
It's funny you should mention that because her specialty. So you remember how I said every circle and every archdevil has a sort of hat or sphere of influence that they have when it comes to deals. Glacia and her minions focus on making deals with mortals who are trying to find legal loopholes in the law to exploit. If you want to sue Disney and get a bunch of money legally, she'll help you do that. Or I guess if you want to do tax evasion but not get caught, you could also do that. But the most hilarious thing about this sphere of influence is that Glacia specializes in getting people who already have their souls bargained for with another devil to get them out of it, get them out of the contract that they've made with another devil in exchange for her now getting their soul. So it's like, why? Why would you do that? It just seems strictly worse. Like, this is pretty much agreed. This is kind of the worst place to be in hell. So why would you want to go to Glacia instead of, I don't know, La Vistas, unless you really don't like cold?
That's a good reason. Look, I feel that way sometimes.
Okay. So as someone who spends a lot of time looking for gaps and loopholes and errors and rules.
Ooh. You and Glacia would get along real well. Yeah, you and Glacia would get along really well.
All right, Glacia, Warlock Patron of Character Optimizers. Just add that to her resume.
100%. 100% she is.
I feel like there are DMs out there that want to send you to Malbolg.
Yeah. That's fair. like how Levistus would help a criminal sort of like survive longer or something. Her whole deal is, no, we're not going to break the law. We're just going to exploit it so that we can get there and get you what you want. It's a very specific niche that she fills, and it's part of her punishment as well. Guess what she tried to do?
Same thing we do
Yeah, go ahead. You do it.
Thing we do with every archdemon, Pinky. Try to overthrow Asmodeus.
Yeah, you got it. Head of the class.
her father. She tried to portray her own father. Who would expect that of devil?
What's weird about Glacia is that she just kind of appeared randomly out of nowhere. Asmodeus just one day said, hey, I have a daughter now, and she's going to do a tour throughout all of hell. And she did. She went. She did there was a whole parade and tour through all of hell for his daughter. The lore's weird, man. The lore's very weird.
What was going on with Malbolg before she got there? Was it a prison, or did she get there and it's this barren landscape?
Actually,
you mess with gravity and throw boulders at people.
I had that information. Give me a second to track it down. Dan, cut this out. Yeah, no, it was always just a prison. Yeah, it was always a prison. The book doesn't say who was in charge of Malbolg before her. Yeah, leaves it kind of vague. It's very weird.
Mm-hmm. They're probably also in that prison, though, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
So Pathfinder lore, wildly different here. Most of the layers of hell have been fairly similar between D&D and Pathfinder, like some name swaps, a few theme swaps here and there. In the Pathfinder lore, this lair is a forest ruled by an archdevil named Moloch, where they hunt the spirits of the damned. If you go to hell as a shade, you can go to a bunch of different places. Like, you go to the forge where they turn you into a demon. You can become a slave to, or sorry, forge where they turn you into a devil. You can become a slave to other devils. And it's just like, great, you're immortal and dead. You serve me forever now. In Moloch, it's just like, oh yeah, go run wild through the forest. We will find you.
Oh my God. I'm sorry to cut back real quick. There was an interesting thing about Malbolg that I forgot to mention. So
okay.
We're going to get to it in a second. But Malbolg was once ruled by the same person who now rules Malodominae. He ruled two. He ruled two different circles of hell. But we'll get to that once we get to Malodominae, which is the next circle.
And I guess it's interesting that for this the sixth layer of hell, our sixth layer of hell. So in PF2, it's Moloch. In 5e lore, Moloch was a previous ruler of Malbolg.
Moloch?
Yeah,
so in, lore?
Is that?
Yeah, in the DMG, Malbolg, they like the opening line, I'll read it. Malbolg, the sixth layer, has outlasted many rulers, among them Malagard, the Hag Countess, and the Archdevil, Moloch. Malagard fell out of favor, blah, blah, blah. Moloch still lingers somewhere on the sixth layer as an imp, so way demoted, plotting to regain Asmodeus's favor.
Interesting, because according to Mordenkainen, Beelzebul was ruler of Malbolg before Glacia. So maybe Moloch was before him. It's unclear.
Yeah, they're not giving anything. I think if anything, they're just throwing in some flavor. I love the idea of a hag countess hanging out, having a good time.
Yeah, that sounds rad.
Wish I knew more. But anyway.
So next layer, Malodomini. If I had to translate that, it probably just means bad domain or domain that of feels bad. Right.
Congratulations, you know how to do Italian. I'm proud of you.
I did actually take 2 years of Latin in school.
Actually, I think that's actually Latin, and it's pronounced Malo Domini, so clearly you did not.
Sure. Okay, it was in middle school. Give me a break.
Hey, nobody's speaking it.
No. All right. Malo Domini. So as best as I can tell, like, this layer is the ruins of civilization and industry. So if you've ever had ambitions to build a city, build an empire, like build some great industrial work, a mine, a castle, any of those things, you can go here and find exactly that in absolute ruins. Completely messed up. Just wrecked.
Yeah, there's a reason for that, because there was once a thriving civilization and city in Malodomini, and it was described as a lush area with gardens. Yes, who? In hell.
Back then, it was a Bene Domini.
No, it was still very much in hell. It wasn't like this was like a nice place to live. It just looked kind of nice.
Yeah, I don't know how to say facade in Italian. It might just be facade.
Probably. Let's go with that. So this one ruled by Beelzebul, also known as the Lord of Flies. So interesting thing about Beelzebul is he's the closest that as anybody has ever come to actually succeeding in overthrowing Asmodeus. He had a whole plan and it didn't work out for him. And what's interesting that I find about the book is that Beelzebul wasn't punished for trying to overthrow Asmodeus, which apparently in hell is not a crime. Interesting.
And yet his daughter's in prison for it.
Hey. No one said this guy wasn't a hypocrite, okay?
Fair.
But no, he basically got caught on what is essentially tax evasion, because he didn't fill out his paperwork right when he was trying to do his plan. And the thing was that his devils comprised the majority of like the main elite army that is on the front lines of the Blood War. So Beelzebul decided, instead of sending his men to the front lines, he was going to hold them back in reserve for when he was going to invade Nessus and take over. But unfortunately for him, a bunch of demons broke through and started to siege Dis, the city of Dis. People were like, hey, Beelzebul, where's your forces? And he doubled down. He's like, I'm not bringing my forces. You can come take them from me. And so that's what they did. An army invaded Malodomini and destroyed it, and that's why it looks like crap now. And Yeah, and then Asmodeus stripped him of his lordship of Malbolg and gave it to his daughter. And Asmodeus gave him a very funny punishment, which is he is not allowed to tell any lie to any devil for any reason ever. And when he does, he turns into a slug for how many years is it? I think it's like a century.
Oh, wow.
let me lie.
You just got to do it strategically.
Yeah.
No, yeah, but the problem is that, like, when he becomes a slug, people just refuse to talk to him. He becomes a slug for 1 year. And what's great about this is that it applied retroactively. So it meant all of the lies he had told in the entire applied retroactively. Oh, no. So he turned into a slug for a millennia. Ow. Yeah. That's not and bad. Yeah, I know. He's okay now, but he's also a very vain person, so he doesn't want to be a slug.
Reasonable. Isn't he a slug from the waist down, though?
No,
that's what the DMG says.
That's just in some of his depictions.
Got it.
The DMG does say that he's a slug from the waist down.
Yeah.
Well, again, this comes from a lot of conflicted information. This is Morgan Kanan that I'm getting it from, so they do not say that. He might well be a slug from the waist down when he's, you know, in his slug form. So yeah, that's the first thing that that's the first part of his punishment is he can't lie to another devil.
Oh, exactly. I think this actually jives with what you're saying. So from the DMG, a bloated fiend with the lower body of an enormous slug, Beelzebul's form was inflicted on him by Asmodeus as punishment for wavering loyalty.
Yeah.
So the idea that he had a punishment was apparently for lying, and it manifests as you look like Slug Boy.
Well, Mordenkainen says that he only recently regained his form. So that's probably why he's depicted like that in other sources, because Mordenkainen kind of takes place chronologically a little bit later in the canon. Anyway,
trustworthy narrator.
I don't know. Take it up with WotC, guys. Okay, I'm just getting I'm giving you what I have. The other part of his punishment is that his sphere of influence is he has to make deals with mortals who want to seek redemption. So like the clearing of a family name, the recovery of a lost fortune, that kind of stuff. And apparently he hates it. He absolutely hates having to help people get their stuff back. Because before, his whole thing was like just making people suffer. Oh, and that's the third part of his punishment. Any deal that you make with Beelzebul is destined to end in ruin for one of the two parties.
So he is forced to make deals to help people recover things that they've lost or redeem themselves in some fashion. And the deal has to end badly for one of them. And he's a devil, so it's going to be you.
Yep.
So you make a deal that he doesn't want to make and things still go badly for you.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So all the devils in hell know that. So they don't make deals with Beelzebul. Most mortals do not know that about Beelzebul, but that's a pretty closely guarded secret because otherwise no mortal would want to treat with him.
Yeah.
But sometimes the book does say that sometimes these have gone badly for Beelzebul when he didn't intend it. Again, it's just all part of his punishment of like, oh, this might go real bad for you. And if it doesn't go bad for you, it might go so bad for the person who you're making a deal with that you don't get their soul at the end. Have fun with that.
Jeez.
Yeah, Asmodeus really does not like Beelzebul.
Yeah.
He really hates him.
But if you think about it, right, like, let's say he makes a deal with 1,000 mortals per year. If 1% of those are, like, cataclysmically fail for him, he still has to deal with 10 of these bombs a year.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, for the other 990, like, they had a bad lifestyle, and that's terrible. And in their head, it's like, you know. Shouldn't make deals with the devil. That's what they always told me. And then for him, like, occasionally it sucks too.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of sucks to be Beelzebul. Not going to lie.
Not fair. The Lord of Flies? You're saying that's not joyful?
Nope.
I mean, sounds like a good title for a devil.
Yeah. Yeah. The moral of the story is do your paperwork in hell. Get those TPS reports in on time.
Oh, God. Okay, so Pathfinder, yet again, slightly different lore. So the lair, I do not know how to pronounce this. It's C-O-C-Y-T-U-S. Is it Cocytus? Is it Cocytus? Is it Cocytus?
I believe it's Cocytus.
Sure, why not? Cockatoos.
It is now.
It's a Greek. Right, so, it's a Greek word. I don't know. Yeah,
I'm real short on Greek people around me to explain this to me, unfortunately. So we're gonna go with cockatoos.
Here, get up while you talk. There you go.
Okay. So it is also ruled by Balzabul, but in the Pathfinder lore, this is yet another ice layer. The spirits of the dead who have been sent to hell are stored in cages, and the entire layer of hell is just a feasting plane for devils. Literally, just they go there to eat copious amounts of food, and the dead people are forced to walk. That is the only thing that happens here. That's it.
I mean, that could suck.
Yeah. But like, imagine if that's like the only thing you had. It's like, I am the ruler of the level of hell where everybody goes and just has a nice meal.
Okay, not no, them. You're denigrating this way too much. Like, come with me.
Okay.
Perpetual party.
Uh-huh.
Where you get to binge everything you want and nothing ever gets worse for you because you're a devil.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. What is it?
So there's some dispute. One source I found says it's a cocytus, and the other one says it's cochitis.
Okay, so it is co-something-itis.
Yeah, I think cochitis sounds better than cocytus, personally, but you...
So do I.
Greek people, please add us on Twitter.
I like consistency MSEs. I'd rather be cochitis or cocytus, so...
Yeah.
Let's go cochitus.
All right, look, until we get...
Cocytus. We live in a cocytus.
You know, we have the ability to get the Paizo folks on here to explain this nonsense.
I would love it. Like, don't brief them. Just like, come on, show. We're gonna talk about some things. How do we say these words? I wasn't prepared for that. I
can't. Hey, I once got into a discussion with a new player of mine that I was introducing them to my world, and I was like, I don't know how I pronounce this thing. They're like, it's your word.
There's so many apostrophes.
They're like, it's your word, though. Like, I don't know what you want from me, man.
The fact that we can write words and we can speak words, but they have to be the same. What do you want from me?
Consistency.
Madness.
It's part of the lore. Nobody knows how to say it.
Okay, so that is layer number 7. Layer number 8. Kania. Who knows? Oh, look, more ice. It's another ice layer. Honestly, I didn't realize there would be this many ice layers in hell.
It's a heating and cooling system is what it is. Wait, okay, but you're saying so many. In 5e, we've only had two, right? There was the one with, so Stygia with Levistus, and now this?
Yeah, look, if I had a nickel for every time a layer of hell froze over, I'd only have 2 nickels, which isn't a lot.
But it's
weird that it happened twice.
Yeah, okay, I gotcha.
You love that joke.
I kind of do. Kania, the archdevil here is Mephistopheles.
Best name ever.
Great devil.
If that sounds familiar, by the way, Mephistopheles was the devil that Faustus made a bargain with.
Yeah.
One of
the first Faustian bargain.
Yes, the first Faustian bargain, yes. Okay.
So Mephistopheles, his whole deal is he wants to conquer the multiverse using an army of devils. You know who else wants to do that? Asmodeus. So he wants to depose Asmodeus, steal Asmodeus's plan and his army.
I mean, okay, steal his plan. Like, what other plan is there going to be? It's like, oh, we're going to get an army of demons. They're never going to work with me.
This place that this might sound familiar is if you play Baldur's Gate 3, we talked before, we got it confused. The artifact MacGuffin of Baldur's Gate 3 was stolen from this guy's vault.
Yep.
Yeah. So, which makes sense because Mephistopheles is basically like the arch wizard of the 9 hells, and his domain is basically one big cold library where someone just took the air conditioner and just turned it on freezing. He makes deals with wizards and sages, and sometimes part of the deal is that while you're still alive, you have to do research for Mephistopheles in Kania, which sucks because you're immortal and it's freezing. Yeah, it's freezing. But he will give you that really powerful 10th level spell that you've wanted.
It sounds honestly a lot like a PhD program. Being realistic, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sitting in a cold lab doing research. not getting paid anything whatsoever. Mm. But as soon as I'm done with that, I'm going to get a 10 level spell.
Or maybe you'll find the secret to turning yourself into a lich. Who knows?
Mm. It's in there.
Or an artifact of great magical significance, like what was seen in Baldur's Gate 3. So yeah, Mephistopheles is the way you go if you want all the magical power, which automatically makes him Tyler's favorite devil.
A little, yeah.
So, that's fair.
Do I want the one that helps me cheat the rules, or do I want the one that gives me incredible magical power?
Hmm. I mean, both are great.
What if I made a deal with Mephistopheles and then talked to Glacia to get me out of the deal with Mephistopheles?
Hey, now you're thinking like an idiot.
Love it.
Congratulations, I'm now a warlock. I don't have the charisma for this.
Yeah, it's like Tyler the player, Mephistopheles, absolutely. Tyler the optimizer, okay. I want to call out the name of the Aes Sedai where Mephistopheles lives, Mephistar.
Yeah.
Very creative.
Hey, he loves himself a great deal, and the first step to doing that is to appreciate your name. So I can respect it. He knows how badass his name is. I don't know what you want.
No, that's fair. Right. I opened with saying it's an awesome name. I want to read a little bit out of the DMG because I think this is great. This is perfect. Like as you're saying, it's like we're dealing with contradictory information. I don't know what you want to do reading from these different sources when they literally are disagreeing. From one source, going to read this passage. He is Asmodeus's greatest enemy and ally. And the Archduke of Nessus appears to trust Mephistopheles' counsel when it is offered.
Yeah, he's basically the vizier and counselor to Asmodeus, which makes him the second most powerful devil in the Nine Hells.
Also, his greatest enemy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he's probably going to try to overthrow him, because that's what all devils do. The difference is that he's smart about it. As you notice, the rest of the devils have all been punished in some way or short, shape or form because they all tried and failed to overthrow Asmodeus. But Mephistopheles, if anybody could succeed, it would be him. And that might be a good hook for a campaign. Mephistopheles kills Asmodeus, and now he's in charge and not beholden to the same rules that Asmodeus is. That is a recipe for disaster, so that could be fun.
Also from the DMG, he is a godfather of sorts to Glacia.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Okay. So
makes
we're getting all kinds of little... Yeah.
Mephistopheles is a cool character. I think he doesn't get used enough. Everybody is always like, ooh, sexy Asmodeus daddy. Nobody talks about Mephistopheles. Just because he's like the old teacher guy who lives in a cold library doesn't mean he's not cool, dang it.
Okay, so Pathfinder lore. So you know how in 5e it's Cania? In Pathfinder, it's Cana, C-A-I-N-A. Literally, they just move the I to the other side of that N.
I thought you were going to say in 5e it's Cania, and Pathfinder it's Cania. Like, that doesn't sound right.
That would be funny, though. Literally, I found almost no information about this layer, except that there's a lot of iron and torture happens here, and that's basically all I could get. Like,
so
this is the torture.
Just anywhere in hell.
So
wait, wasn't the second layer in 5e lore the place where you went to get iron ore?
Yeah.
So it's a lot like this.
Yeah, a bit. Not like that.
Who dis? Yeah, who dis?
So one other thing, and we'll go back to this when we talk about the River Styx in a minute. If you take the River Styx, which can carry you through the layers of hell in Pathfinder, it goes from the sixth layer of hell, Cana, off into the Astral Sea. The River Styx never reaches the seventh layer of hell in Pathfinder.
Okay.
Interesting.
Spooky mystery.
You mean eighth layer of hell?
No, this is the eighth layer.
Oh, you're saying it doesn't reach the layer before?
No, it never reaches layer number 9.
I'm confused.
You said some funny numbers a second.
Yeah,
that's
okay. You said the River of Styx never reaches Cana. Level 7.
Okay, so we're on...
Apparently math is hell. Okay. Can I call back what you said, and then you tell me if I said what you were trying to say when you didn't say what you meant to say?
Words are hard.
The River Styx flows to the eighth layer of hell in PFQ, and then exits into the Astral Sea, never reaching the ninth layer of hell.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Because you originally said it doesn't reach the seventh layer. And then I was confused. And I said, but what about the eighth layer? We're on the eighth layer. Like, yeah, this is the eighth layer
in there somewhere.
Just like, Tyler, what are you talking about?
You know Ash doesn't like numbers. Why are you trying to mess with him?
I think I messed Tyler up by saying that there were seven layers of hell at the beginning instead of nine.
My brain is bad.
I'm so sorry. This is my fault.
Okay. No. This is a long-standing problem, sir.
I've imparted my absolute just not understanding math onto you, and I apologize.
Look, I understand
this is dice contagious?
Math. Yeah, my uneducated demeanor is going to extend to you too, Randall. You'll be trying to do some complex equations and be like, "I want a burger." And then you will forget numbers are a thing.
I already do that. That's you?
Oh no.
Sorry, buddy.
Apparently, I've hit stage four. Whatever this is.
It turns out the eighth layer of hell is just forgetting the ability to do math.
Yeah.
Quick, let's.
There are people. There are people out there right now. It's like, take me to the eighth layer of hell. Are you kidding?
Yeah, no, that is my heaven. That's my eighth layer of heaven. I don't know what you're talking about. So let's get to the big granddaddy finale.
Yes. Nessus.
Wasn't Nessus from the Nintendo games?
I don't know.
It was Ness.
Ness, famously named after the Nintendo Entertainment System. I don't actually know if that's true.
No, I don't think it is.
I know that it isn't.
Okay.
No, it's 100% not true.
Dang. That would have been really funny. So Nessus, this is where Asmodeus lives. In 5e, we have some lore about it. The entire layer of hell is mostly flat with giant, nearly bottomless pits. Functionally bottomless pits. You're not going to reach the bottom. The walls of these pits are fortresses. And this is just where Asmodeus keeps his army, with which he plans to eventually conquer the multiverse. Asmodeus lives in a cathedral which comes up from the bottom of one of these bottomless pits. Don't question it. He lives in it like a spire-like cathedral in the middle of one of these pits, because he has to. Why not? He's got to be fancy.
So, are you guys ready to hear the origin of how things work in hell? And Asmodeus himself. So, Asmodeus is actually kind of an interesting character. Most people just think he's just Satan, or just a generic evil guy. He's got some motivations. A long time ago, the angels accused Asmodeus of being naughty, essentially, and like not. He was already the ruler of hell, so I'm like, yeah, fair.
That checks out.
But they were accusing him of, like, you know, deceiving people and, you know, not being lawful and all this other stuff. And he didn't like that, so to settle this dispute, they went to Primus, the guy of Mechanus, who's like just completely lawful neutral. He has no stake in things, so they figured he would be a good neutral party. And so a bunch of people brought their arguments as to why, like, you know, Asmodeus is bad and he should be eliminated and stuff like that. Asmodeus is like, look, we don't actually ever deceive people. We're upfront with humans as to what they're going to get out of this deal. That's kind of part of it. And, you know, we're not trying to trick good people into accepting deals, because if they were good, they probably wouldn't accept the deal anyway. We're sifting out the bad, evil parts of humanity. Like, we're getting rid of the evil people and bringing them here, because if we can bring them here, we can use them as soldiers to keep back the demons. You know who wants to destroy everything and wants to trick people and kill them and has no logic or rhyme or reason or respect for law and order? Demons. Interesting. Isn't that we're providing a valuable service by taking evil people from the prime material plane and keeping the really bad stuff from getting onto your doorstep? So I'm a good guy, actually, basically, which, you know, it kind of makes some twisted logical sense when you think about it. But the angels were really pissed at him. And so it ended up just becoming a huge fight. There was a brawl in the courtroom. So Primus was just like, okay, I've heard enough. I'm not going to rule on whether Asmodeus is doing the right thing, actually, because that's not really my place. But here's what I'm going to say. Asmodeus, you have to stay in hell with your devils, and I'm giving you this thing called the Ruby Rod that will give you the ability to make contracts with mortals. And that's the only interaction that you can have with mortals is when you're trying to make deals with them. And if you or your devil friends break any of these contracts, you will be erased from existence. Or you'll be punished. That's what it is. You'll be punished.
The individual or the society as a whole?
The individual. Both, essentially, yeah. Which is why Asmodeus has to keep his devils in line so that stuff doesn't rain down on his head. Everybody's essentially a prisoner in hell. That's essentially what is, even Asmodeus, because everybody's trying to take his job and he has to fulfill an arbitrary quota that Primus has given to him. And if he doesn't fulfill it, bad things will happen to him. So yeah, it sucks to be Asmodeus, y'all. Everybody thinks, it'd be great to be the ruler of hell. No, it sucks just as hard.
Nobody thinks that. Except for the archdevils on the other layers of hell, because it's like, if you're going to be there, at least, you know.
Apparently, Tyler also thinks so.
No, I'm okay.
I love what you just described is basically the you can't handle the truth from Jack Nicklaus's character in A Few Good Men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. Who's going to fight you?
That's exactly what Asmodeus is. He's essentially Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men. Like, that's basically what he is. He thinks what he's doing is completely justified. It's, you know, jury's out if he actually really believes that, but he says he does. But the thing about Asmodeus is he doesn't have a sphere of influence because he doesn't actually deal directly with mortals. No, you can't actually make a deal with Asmodeus. You have to deal with one of his archdevils or their minions.
It's interesting, though. So the whole idea of this is... Everybody, like, okay, you know, I'm King Devil. I've got all these devils underneath me. We have a strict hierarchy. There's opportunities for promotion. If you can do the lawful backstab, you'll get a promotion. Everybody comes in low level. If you survive long enough, I'll turn you into an imp. If you survive long enough as an imp, we'll go into something better. Maybe you're probably going to die. It's going to suck. Promotions, demotions all the way. But this whole thing is basically everybody write contracts with mortals. We will turn their souls into more devils. The best devils will survive, and I will put them in a pit to be in my army when they get good enough. And then eventually, enough mortals will die having signed contracts with us that we can conquer the multiverse. That's the plan.
Yeah.
Seems to be. Yeah.
Yeah. If hell is one big corporation, and Asmodeus is the CEO, then the ruby rod is government regulation. So,
just imagine you rule an entire plane of existence. You're the embodiment of lawful evil in the multiverse, and you are forced to at all times hold the magical rod of multiplanar bureaucracy.
Yeah, he has to keep it with him at all times. If he is ever separated from the ruby rod, he'll be like erased from existence. So he can't be parted from the ruby rod as much as he would want to, because it's both like his key to power and his jailer. So yeah, it's
might as well love it. Ruby rod probably was my favorite character in Fifth Element.
God, what a good movie.
I hate you so okay, much. But
just, yeah, show throw notes. This out there. So link in the show notes. Nessus, a famous centaur who killed Heracles, whose poison blood in turn, excuse me, killed by Heracles. Whose poison blood in...
No. Stop. I'm sorry. How are you pronouncing that word?
Heracles?
Heracles, is that it?
Yeah.
Yes, it's Heracles, not Heracles. What?
Who is this dude?
It's Hercules.
Oh, it's... Okay. Then what?
Because the Greek...
Like I think it would look like...
Oh, because it's okay. Greek. Hercules is the Latin version. Heracles.
Really?
Heracles.
Can you blame him? It's like if you've never heard it pronounced, it makes Heracles, sense based on the spelling.
It sounds like some sort of tool or something. I left my Heracles on the bench over there. Could somebody please get this for me?
I got a hair disease. Like I was going to get a little bit down later and find out. Like this was the first one. Yeah.
I love that. That is the greatest mispronunciation of a word that I've ever heard, and I love it so much. Heracles.
It's gonna get better. We're gonna keep doing this podcast. Ash, you're gonna hear more. Anyway, Nessus was a centaur, and now it's the ninth layer of hell in Fifth Dimension's dungeon.
That's right. Yeah, Nessus killed his or tried to take Heracles' wife, right? I wasn't paying attention to what you were saying because I was too focused on Heracles.
From what I remember of the Hercules myths, like, he got married like 3 times and didn't actually want to get married, but didn't like to be told no, and that was his whole thing.
Well,
it's like, which wife did this centaur steal?
Yeah, the big thing I remember, so how he died, I don't know if it was Nessus, but one of the centaur tried to steal his wife. Heracles killed it. As the centaur was dying, he said to Heracles' wife, if he's ever unfaithful to you, dip a robe into my blood, and if he's ever unfaithful to you, give it to him. And she was like, okay. And so she had thought that he was, I don't know if he was or not. I think maybe he was being unfaithful to her. It's left ambiguous. And so she gave it to him, and it was poison that stuck to his skin, and he tried to tear it off and ended up tearing himself apart. And so his wife felt so guilty on his funeral pyre that she threw herself onto the fire. And that's how Heracles died. Greek myths, y'all. Wow.
Yeah.
Greek myths.
Hey, so Pathfinder myths. All right, so the lore for Nessus is pretty cool in Pathfinder. The lair Nessus is nearly unknown. The end.
Cool.
Wait.
Yep. That's all I could find.
Because a second ago, what you said is that it's pretty cool.
Nearly unknown. That is literally the only information I could find. That's not nearly. That's pretty much entirely. We know it's there in theory. We know Asmodeus lives there again in theory. I think that's it. Like, you, as far as I can tell, if you plane shift into hell, you arrive on the top layer of hell. You have to go down using the River Styx. The River Styx goes from layer 8 out into the astral sea, so the one way to go down a layer does not reach layer number 9. So as far as I know, within the Pathfinder lore, no mortal has ever been to Nessus.
So it sounds like in PF2, hell has 8 layers, and then there's a rumor that maybe... Okay.
Spicy bonus layer.
Yeah. It's like somebody put, you know, carpet over the stairs that lead down into the basement.
Does that count?
Yeah.
So we talked about this a little bit. We talked about the River Styx. Let's talk, how do we get in and out of hell? Because apparently there's some steps, and like the exact text that we've given, we've read some of this already on this episode and the last one, but how do we get in and out of hell? Because it is kind of ambiguous.
Yeah, plane shift. It's the answer to everything.
Kind of, yeah. So from the Dungeon Master's Guide, no planar portals connect directly to the lower layers of the 9 hells by Asmodeus's orders. We've talked about the planes a bit. We've talked about the ethereal plane. We talked about Spelljammer and a little bit about the astral sea. Then, like, a lot of planes just have portals that go to other planes, random places on those planes, and they just happen by some whatever. Asmodeus is apparently cool enough to say, like, no, this is my plane of existence. Absolutely not. You can go to the top layer. You can show up on my front door. You do not get to show up in my foyer.
That's how it works. So if you want to get down to the cathedral and tell Asmodeus that you love him and you're his biggest fan, you have to go through all of that stuff we just talked about. All of it.
The freezing, the layers, the feasting, the city, the sewers, the ice, the fire.
Give you a nice souvenir for your troubles.
I get down to like the 3rd level or the 4th level, and then I realize this hike's not for me.
You can get out just fine.
Okay, so plenty of portal out. That's great. Just know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to get in. It's easy to get out. Actually, okay. It's also really easy to get in. It's just not easy to get in very far.
I mean, it depends. Yeah, okay. There are some settings where it's pretty hard to get out of hell as well. Like, depending on how low you are down, like, plane shifting wouldn't work. You might have to go back up, but who knows? Yeah, when you get to Stygia, there's that cold that will kill you in 5 seconds, so good luck with that. I hope you brought some really warm clothes.
Yeah. So we talked about the River Styx. The exact text I found, a tendril of the Styx winds through every layer of the 9 hells, allowing passage from one layer of that plane to the next. So, like, what form this takes exactly in 5e is really badly explained, or just not explained. In Pathfinder, there are these things called hell mouths, which are literally like, it's a giant sculpture of a face with an open demon mouth, and the River Styx goes into it.
So makes sense.
Great big landmark. Yeah, makes sense.
You know, what's also funny about the Styx is it's the only way for the demons of the Abyss to get out of the Abyss. So that's why there's the blood war.
Boy, yeah, that's a whole thing.
Yep.
So this is very much like the River Styx taking from Greek mythology. Like, it is, you know, it carries dead spirits in some fashion. If you touch the waters of the River Styx, you lose all of your memories, which is a terrible way to go.
Oh, boating down is not the smart idea.
Yeah.
Is that in D&D or in mythology?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There are creatures that make a living off of ferrying people along the River Styx. Like, there are certain creatures that are immune to it. So they're just like, yeah, whatever, River Styx, it's fine, get in my boat. There are creatures who are just very clever and careful. There are some that are just insane. And then there are fiends that live in the River Styx along with other insane creatures who've gone in there. And it's like, I no longer have memory. Like, I imagine if you just live in the River Styx, like, your brain just does not retain information. So that's got to be a terrible, terrible way to exist. Yeah, let's see. Okay, so there is some exact text from the DMG. The most expeditious means of doing so is the River Styx, which plunges ever deeper as it flows from one layer to the next. Only the most courageous adventurers can withstand the torment and horror of that journey. Because, yeah, everything you're going to see on the River Styx is going to suck.
On the flip side, though, it sounds like as long as I could just touch the water and then I'll forget everything I've seen.
That's true.
So let's say I'm planning my holiday getaway to the ninth layer of hell.
Right.
What are some of the locals that I can find in my lovely excursion down the nine layers?
I think you can look forward to meeting demons. One more time.
I mean, maybe meeting some demons on lots the first layer. Yeah, lots of devils. Yeah.
There were two possible words I could say.
Lots of devils, and then on the upper couple layers of hell, you're actually likely to meet mortals and other planar travelers in cities in the first couple layers of hell. Layers 3 and below, people probably aren't going to go that far unless they've got some really crazy stuff they have to do, because it's hard. And you have to touch the River Styx, and nobody wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The city of Dis seems like it would be a pretty cool destination. Like, the stuff you're going to get there is probably pretty crazy. Like, the trading's probably interesting. You can probably get really cool magic items. I bought this cool sword in hell. It was great.
Yeah, but maybe not the best place for, like, a destination wedding. Unless, you know, you really don't want anybody to show up. Lovely, lovely beachfront property at Dis, second layer of hell. So,
sculptures.
We talked before about how certain devils start as lemures and then they work their way up to stronger and stronger devils. It's basically like getting promoted. Now, if you're looking at Mordenkainen, which is where we first got like some of the higher tier devil and demon stat blocks, you'll wonder, why are there so many demon prince stat blocks and only one devil prince? What was it?
Archdevil?
Archdevil, that's what I meant. Zariel. Why is Zariel the only one here? Well, Zariel's kind of the most pathetic of the archdevils. Not gonna lie. Sorry for all those Zariel stands out there.
All two of them.
Yeah, all two of them. She's kind of a crappy character. Sorry. So the problem is that archdevils are on a full other level of power from demon princes, and they're essentially like gods. That's why they don't get a stat block, because if they got a stat block, they would be killable. And if you want to make them killable, you're probably doing some very high level campaign stuff. So, yeah.
Sounds right. I mean, shoot, the demon princes range from what, like CR, like just below 20 to like mid 20s or something, if I'm remembering right.
And they're extremely takeable. Like, even at like level 13, you could kill the Demogorgon. I know Stranger Things made him seem like he was really scary. He's not. He's pretty pathetic, actually.
that wasn't even the Demogorgon, though, right?
It was the weird flappy mouth. They called it Demogorgon because that's who they were fighting in D&D.
Yeah.
That was not a two-headed baboon, sir.
Yeah, no, the Demogorgon in D&D is way cooler than in Stranger Things. Sorry for all you fans who came from Stranger Things. Our Demogorgon's way cooler. Just so you know.
Yep. Stranger Things is awesome, though, and I'm looking forward to the final season coming back.
I'm not. Right. I have a suspicion it's going to be bad. But
God, I hope not.
Maybe that's just me being pessimistic with the way things are going at Netflix right now.
So something I kind of noticed about devils as we've looked at them over the course of this two-part episode, you start as a Lemure, you get promoted through various tiers of devil, usually by like supplanting a higher up or some other kind of wheeling and dealing, but it's all like backstabbing, politics, shenanigans, things like that. It seems like the entire thing, top to bottom, is just a cycle of abuse. It's like the lower you are on the totem pole, the more you are abused. But to go up the totem pole, you have to be progressively more and more abusive. So it's just like you have to get worse and worse and worse to go further up the totem pole until you get to Asmodeus, who is just bullying the entire multiverse.
So late stage capitalism.
I don't think so. I think that's a
no, different so. Sort of abuse.
No, I mean, it's a borderline cliche.
What Wing Lady makes a good point. Any multi-level marketing company. Yeah. If you want to look, I don't want to get on my soapbox here, but like if you want for Fortune 500 companies or multi-level marketing companies or any of those big corporations, if you want to get to the top, you have to kind of be a bit of a jerk and you have to be okay with exploding people because that's what 90% of the companies do. So, yeah.
Capitalism. Yay. All right.
Anyway.
We don't endorse communism and pinkos on our podcast. That's what Randall's saying.
No, it's not that. It's just like it's a gross oversimplification. Anyway,
we're not a politics podcast, so let's move on.
No, but I think the point that you're making, Tyler, is right. I guess right and relevant. Like, what is the idea here? The idea is let's build an army capable of conquering the multiverse. What does Asmodeus respect? He respects power, and he respects people working within the system, climbing up to gain that power. So you can't just come and cheat the system and then wind up as his lieutenant. You have to do it in the system. But luckily, they have Eternity, so they can keep cranking on souls, where 1 out of 10,000, 1 out of 1,000,000 actually winds up being good enough to be in the army. But one day, they're going to be able to conquer the multiverse.
Yeah, you're right. It is an oversimplification of capitalism, because in capitalism, they can cheat the rules in order to advance up. Sorry, sure. I'm done.
If there's anything we can learn from Asmodeus, it's never give up on your dreams, folks.
Yeah.
Your horrible, like, horrible dreams. Your horrible, awful dreams.
Listen, never give up on your dreams if you're Asmodeus.
See, I'm not evil. I'm just a dreamer. And I'm not a villain. I'm just ahead of the curve. Join my devil legions today. Brought to you and paid for by the team to vote Asmodeus king of the multiverse.
If Asmodeus ever conquers the multiverse, he does it through electoral politics.
He absolutely would. He's not like Vecna, who just wants to murder everybody and turn them into his undead servants. No. If Asmodeus wants to take over the world, he wants to be both loved and feared. So he would absolutely exploit the political system in order to gain power.
I could see it.
I would run a campaign where it's like Asmodeus is actually like running to be president or whatever, and everybody except the players thinks he's just some normal dude, but you all know that it's Asmodeus.
Oh god. No, I'd like to keep the real world in my game separate. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I realized it when I said it.
Who would fall for that? Like, who would be? Oh. Anyway, here's the deal, folks. This week, we have a question of the week.
Good.
Tyler's sitting right. Thank God.
Get me out of this.
Do you feel like D&D and Pathfinder are suffering from power creep within one edition or between editions?
Yes.
Well, this question comes to us from at the Gorazor.
I can't speak too much to Pathfinder 2. Pathfinder 2 feels pretty well balanced from my perspective, but I only started doing it recently, so I don't know what huge changes have been made. I will say 5th edition D&D, absolutely. Just look at how Sorcerer was, how it originally released and how it is now. Like, every subclass they've added has power crept the previous subclasses. Like, this is very egregious with Sorcerer, just because of like the most recent subclasses for Sorcerer are just better wholesale than the rest because they get free spells. This is the that simple. They get free spells. No, the earlier subclasses don't. So yeah, and we talked about Eloquence Bard and how Eloquence Bard basically nullifies taking any other subclass of Bard. Twilight Cleric, controversial for a reason because it basically nullifies any other cleric subclass that you could take. D&D is notoriously bad about this. Like, it's been bad about this in all editions, I would say, except maybe 4th edition. 4th edition was better, but the problem that they had there was they went for complete balance to the point of homogeneity, where all classes were basically the same, which was like, okay, that's not what we were looking for. Balance is hard. I get that. But there's a right way and a wrong way to do things. At least they're not in the 3.5 era, because that stuff was wild. That stuff was like, it was the Wild West, and it was just like, we have all these different things. And here's Sad Bard on his sad little corner, sitting over here, playing his little recording flute. So,
how do you make Bard good? You multi-class.
Yeah, you don't play Bard.
Do something else.
Yeah,
you don't play Bard.
Okay, I agree with Ash on basically every point. Yeah, like 5e, obviously the power creep, significant. Like Tasha's power crept the game so much.
Xanathar's was less egregious than Tasha's. Tasha's was very blatant how much it power crept everybody.
I want to add on to this question.
Okay.
Has it been a bad thing for 5e? Has that power creep made the game worse?
Yes and no. I would argue that in some ways it's corrected some of the problems that I think were the fundamental design issues with the classes that needed to be addressed, like specifically with Ranger, because Ranger was a broken class. And that's why that's why I feel like they're moving into the 2024 rules, because like, okay, we went too far in some places, so we're just going to make Tasha's the new standard, which I think is fair and valid, and that's what they should do. So yes, I think it's been good. No, in the fact that before they announced the 2024 rules, it did invalidate a lot of choices for people. And especially if you're playing with a group that really values optimization and combat and that kind of stuff, there were choices that you just were not allowed to play in some groups, which sucks. And you know, every class should be viable. And for this obviously doesn't affect groups like groups that I run where we don't really care about optimization. You can play any class you want, any subclass you want, and you'll probably still be okay. But with like Adventurers League and like where they heavily favor optimization over roleplay, then there are just going to be some classes that you're never going to see played because they're just not good.
The power creep was good because most of the power creep went to classes that aren't wizard.
Wow. So blatant. The favoritism that's on display is just like, it didn't affect my class, so I don't give a crap.
That's the opposite. Wizards are still the best class. Everyone else got to keep up a little bit. I look at
Sorcerer's Tasha's. The bar the first wizard was born.
I follow you because basically what you're saying is since nobody overtook my power crept my precious wizard class, then I don't care.
If they had made the wizard more powerful and had to advance everybody to keep up, it's like, okay, this is just an arms race. But they looked at all of the classes and said, like, okay, we're going to try and like raise all ships. And Wizard got to stay where it was because Wizard was perfect.
Yeah, Wizard is is objectively the strongest class in D&D. Like it is. Yeah, exactly. There's Wizard, and then there's everybody else down here.
The subclasses they gave us in Tasha's, Bladesinger, massively overrated by most people. You look at Bladesinger and everyone thinks all of these features are really cool. Yes, the features are really cool, but the best thing that a Bladesinger can ever do is just cast a spell. Like it. 100% of the time. Well, also Order of Scribes, which was a love letter to me.
Speaking as a DM who currently has more than one Bladesinger in their campaign, I think you're really? Wrong.
Wow.
I think you're wrong. Bladesingers are incredibly powerful, and they even show up paladins, which is wild. Like, in what they do. Like, it's just like, why do we need a fighter anymore? Because now we have a tank and a blaster and a support caster. hell, the freaking bladesinger could probably just do this whole fight by themselves. It's stupid.
You know who's better at being a martial character than a bladesinger doing martial stuff?
Yeah,
any summoned creature.
That's fair.
Like, yeah, but you can just why take the subclass? Just summon something.
I don't know. I've seen them perform very well. I agree with you that I do think it is overrated. But
the point he's making isn't that they can't perform very well. He knows they can perform well. They're wizards. Yeah. The point that he's trying to make is they don't have to be a bladesinger to perform well.
Yeah. They can just be a wizard. Yeah.
But the problem is I counter your point about summoned creature is that you know how you get rid of a summoned creature? Attack the squishy wizard so their concentration is broken. That's and fair. Sometimes right. that's even worse because like if you summon an elemental and you knock out the wizard, which isn't hard to do, I might add, suddenly you have a new strong enemy on the field who is now trying to kill all of you. So yeah, that's maybe not the best approach.
Another elemental.
There you go. That's thinking like a wizard.
Fire with fire.
Yeah. Okay. But you know who couldn't do that and also not have to deal with those saves because they don't get hit. Are you going to
say Bladesinger?
Bladesinger, because they don't get hit. That's the issue. I've seen people play Bladesinger who have bumped their AC up to 30. It's insane. Yeah. At like level 7. It's insane. Mm-hmm. I can't hit that.
Dex saves, man. I think the power creep, most of it in 5e has been good. There are a few places where it has gone way too far. Ash called out like some of the really busted subclasses and why they're a problem. In terms of things that are bad about it, all of the adventures that were published before Tasha's were expecting a wildly different level of power from characters. So, like, if you go back and take Tasha's era characters into those adventures, they are going to be a cakewalk. Any even reasonably optimized character will just steamroll those adventures, zero problems. So like in a lot of ways, those adventures are just obsolete. So you have to either like limit your characters or adjust the campaign or something. It's like that's a ton of work and trouble created by this power.
Oh no, I have to buy new adventures.
Exactly. Yeah. I have to buy adventures that keep up with the meta. Good God.
Yeah. When you can go into the Tomb of Horrors and feel like it's a cakewalk, something has gone wrong. Something is just fundamentally wrong.
In terms of power creep across editions, yes, obviously. Like, if you look at the Tomb of Horrors and how it's handled in, like, first or second edition compared to how you would handle it in fifth edition, like, no contest. Fifth edition characters are going to walk through that so much more easily.
Yeah. I think one of the major complaints of 5e is that 5e really power loads the player characters and doesn't compensate with the monsters, so it often feels like the DM is playing with kid gloves on, which has been an interesting transition from 5e to Pathfinder 2, especially when I'm homebrewing campaigns, because in 5e I'm used to just being like, okay, the player characters are this level, so if I put something that's just like a level, like a CR level under them, I can just put a bunch of stuff on there and they'll figure it out. I did that with a Pathfinder 2. I threw like three level two zombies at four level two characters. Yeah, that went well. Yeah, that was a nightmare. So like, oh, I have to make calculations and actually pay attention to how I build encounters and can't just throw random stuff on the board. Ooh, this is nice. I like this.
You say that. So the one thing that my sons wanted to do for spring break, we had spring break this week, was play Pathfinder 2. So we ran a one-shot. It was the one-shot the rot. One-shot?
Headshot the rot.
Headshot the rot. Thank you. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense, honestly.
Yeah.
It's actually, I don't know if the Humble Bundle is still up, or I guess by the time this podcast comes out, it'll almost probably certainly not be gone. Yeah. But anyway, through a series of poor tactical choices that my kids made, they got their first TPK.
Randall, I'd like to point out that I've had exactly two TPKs in my entire life, and both of them have been with you in the room.
That's correct.
Yeah, I TPK'd a Pathfinder 2 game. They were both
my fault a little bit.
Sorry, you TPK'd your party too?
Yeah, I TPK'd a one-shot PF2 game. Not technically one person survived, but that was it. Wildly underestimated what I thought the party could handle, because again, like compared to 5e, I took four level 7 players and put a CR 13 with legendary actions, and it bruised them a bit, but they still freaking nerfed it. So it's just like, so taking one, doing something similar would absolutely destroy a party in Pathfinder 2. So it's just, the 5e monsters are hitting with like wet pool noodles is what it feels like.
Sincerely, I feel this way more and more. I feel like the only way to make 5e feel threatening is something like gritty realism, where you are just, no long rest. Like, we're not doing the two-fight adventuring day where you get a nappy nap after you've cast four spells in the day. I'm going to drive you to the point where, like, you're breaking the meta wall, and you're just like, folks, I only have four first-level spell slots left, and we are level 10.
Yeah. No, I agree. The long rest has been the killer of 5e in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So, Gorosaur, thank you very much for your question. We have enjoyed it, and I think that leads us to our next segment. All hail the Leisure Illuminati.
Hail Satan!
I'm Randall James.
We're recording this on Easter.
I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what to tell you. It needed to be said.
All hail... Wait, no, I did that. That's how we got here in the first place. I am Randall James, and you will find me on amateurjack.com and on Twitter and Instagram at jackamateur.
I'm Tyler Kampstra. You'll find me on rpgbot.net, Facebook and Twitter, rpgbot.net, and most other socials as rpgbot.
Sirius Rex, you can find me, supplicant, on Twitter at Graven Ashes.
Nope, can't do that.
Yeah, that's hard.
No, it was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I tried. Hail the Beast. 666 and all that on this our holy day of Jesus and the Savior. praise the Antichrist. And if you hate all of that, feel free to at me on Twitter or follow, check out my YouTube channel at Graven or at Ash Raven Media. Excuse me, I got too into the bit. And if you want me to run a game for you or your friends or yell at me some more, you can feel free to reach out to me on startplaying.games, link in the description.
If you've enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and rate us on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. It's a quick free way to support the podcast and helps us to reach new listeners. You'll find links in the show notes. You'll find affiliate links for source books and other materials linked in the show notes, as well as on rpgbot.net. Following these links helps us to make this show happen every week. If your question should be the question of the week next week, please email podcast@rpgbot.net or message us on Twitter at rpgbotdotnet. Please also consider supporting us on Patreon, where you'll find all kinds of great rewards. At any tier, you'll get early access to RPGBot.com content and polls for future content. At our $3 tiers, you'll enjoy your choice of ad-free access to RPGBot.net or ad-free podcast episodes and access to the live stream podcast recordings. At our $5 tiers and above, you'll get all of that, plus access to the RPGBot.net Discord. You'll find us at patreon.com/RPGBot.
So, for folks listening on the audio, something special that I do for the folks attending the live stream. I have this whiteboard over my right shoulder, and every episode we record, I draw. I scribble some form of visual Easter egg.
Which we can't see because it's not in frame. So well done.
Well,
it is if we're wide.
Full screen my window.
Yeah.
Full screen my window and you'll see the thing.
Fair enough.
So I've got a little visual Easter egg here, and it feels appropriate to mention that here. As we're recording on Easter. I'm sure this episode will be out in like 2 weeks, but here we are.
Okay, so the fact
that it's an Easter egg, because I can't actually quite make out
preemptive strike on the dad joke about Easter.
Oh, it wasn't really an Easter, it was just an observation, like Easter eggs are things that we hide in plain sight for things to find. Like, we are the joyous children in this podcast recording.
Anyway, I will say I just full screened you and I still can't see it because you're so blurry. You're so blurry. Oh,
yeah. Am I blurry? Am I robot blurry?
Ooh, that's okay. Now I can see it.
It helps. Okay.
It isn't even an Easter egg anymore.
I know. I love the video compression. The way that it worked for me, at least, is it was a solid whiteboard. And then all of a sudden in red letters, what appeared was, Hell, Michigan.
Now, you know what you need to do? Something I've considered doing in the past is I have this TV behind me and I toyed with putting like a an image that relates to what we're talking about on the back. So you could try something like that.
You should. We all should. I would have to buy more toys, I guess. I would have to plan ahead better.
I'd have to rearrange my room so that the screen is right behind me instead of over there.
Can we do it with a clever use of mirrors?
Maybe. Yeah, it would probably behoove me to do some rearranging because I'm not a big fan of my bed just being right behind.
Understandable. All right, well, we should probably call it there, folks. Happy Easter, everyone who celebrates and everyone who just eats the candy.
Happy Easter.
All right. Thanks for joining us, folks, in the chat. We'll see you next time.
Bye.